This is Anthony Hutless, and this episode is brought to you by IVMV Patreon supporter like me.
Hi, and thanks for downloading this midweek episode of the IVMV podcast. This is our 394th episode. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and joining me, the other two hosts of this podcast.
Hello, it's Andy.
And Kurt.
Although the Cubs have only played, two games since our last episode, a rainout is to blame for that. We have quite a bit to talk about on this episode. We'll talk about two games against the Brewers, Miguel Montero going to the disabled list, Chris Bryant's injury that happened today. Andy, you and I saw the South Bend Cubs. We'll briefly share what we saw there. We have some questions from a few Patreon supporters. We have a couple of scary stats and a Rube Waddell story. Before we get to all that, though, if you are listening to this on Friday, today is the last day to nominate us for the podcast awards. And for the last 2 years, we've been one of the 10 finalists in the sports category for the podcast awards. Both years we ended up losing to an ESPN podcast, but they're not eligible to win this year. So who knows? Maybe we have a chance. The first step is for us, to win that is for us to be a finalist. And here's how you can make that happen. Go to podcastawards.com and under the sports category, type in IVNV for the show name. And our URL is IVNV.com. And, like I said last time I talked about this, I don't feel that we have one of the best sports podcasts, but I feel that we have one of the best groups of listeners, and these awards say more about you than us. So you can nominate your favorite podcasts at podcastawards.com, and while you're there, nominate all of them that you listen to, but we would also appreciate it if you would support some of our friends. I Hate Critics. We've been on their podcast before, and Bob has been on ours several times. So write I Hate Critics in the TV and movie category. So Andy, we saw part of a South Bend Cubs game. Any thoughts from the game? I don't have many thoughts other than the fact that free ticket night really brings out the Quad City's finest. And you don't often see a guy in a black trench coat and snakeskin boots at a baseball game, but we did. And nor do you see adults very obsessed, overly obsessed with Rascal, the raccoon mascot for the Bandits. But my mom and I, we got there pretty early and really enjoyed the people watching that Modern Woodman provided that night. But
yeah, it's a feast for the eyes as far as people watching is concerned. It's pretty delightful. But on the field, I mean, it was kind of a rough night. It was really cold. And so I was having a little bit of trouble between trying to keep the kid entertained and keep an eye on the game, focusing on everything. But we saw the South Bend have a pretty good inning with Eloy Jimenez and Eddie Julio Martinez getting on base and both getting driven in by Daniel Spingola. And so we got a glimpse of sort of what those guys can do. On the pitching side, we didn't really see anybody noteworthy, but we got to see Donnie DeWeese, Eloy Jimenez, Eddie Julio Martinez. Those guys had some pretty bright moments in the game. DeWeese hit a triple. I think it must've been after I left, but it was cool to see those guys. Eloy Jimenez is a sight to behold. The dude is a gigantic man.
Yeah, I stand by the fact that he reminds me of Soler, build-wise.
Yeah, for sure. So that outfield that they have there is pretty stout. The infield, on the other hand, is, let's just say, a little lacking in impact players, I think. But
well, before you got there, I saw a really nice defensive play by Fleete, who was playing shortstop, and he had a really nice defensive play. So, yeah, I hesitate to say anything based on what we saw because I think I'll sound like an idiot because I'm so not a scout. But so I guess what kind of stood out to me is even though these guys were exciting to see I guess Cubs fans that don't live in Arizona and didn't go to spring training, this is kind of your first chance to see these guys that were drafted or signed in the international free agent draft a couple years ago in Jimenez and Martinez. And then Deweese was drafted last year. So it's kind of our first chance to see them. But I think it just kind of stood out to me. These guys still have quite a bit of developing to do. I mean, we've seen some players come through low A, the Midwest League, and look dominant. And I mean, we saw Kyle Schwarber play in low A less than a year from his promotion to the majors. right after he got drafted. So I think it kind of goes without saying that I think these guys have, you know, a lot of raw abilities and talents, but I think that there's a good amount of development to do there. And I don't know. That's pretty easy to say. I don't feel like I'm going out on a limb or anything.
Not surprising about guys who sign when they're 16 and are most of them, if not all of them, are sub 20 years old at this point. So.
Right.
Yeah. Development is in their future.
Yeah, but yeah, we only stuck around for five innings, and it was windy and cold. And actually, though, tonight they're playing a doubleheader because yesterday's game got rained out. And I'm on full time dad duty tonight. Well, which is why I'm podcasting. Well, they're in bed, but
girls do whatever you want.
Yeah, because Tawny is up watching the doubleheader, so which is kind of a role reversal, but hey, that's cool. I like that.
But yeah, we did get glimpses of, you know, why the Cubs, you know, what the Cubs see in these players, you know, a few times. You know, Jimenez first, for example, hit a hard double. And he looked pretty good at the plate from what I could tell. And just a mountain of a man. I mean, so yeah, I mean, they're young and they have a lot of work ahead of them, a lot of experience to be gained, but you could tell that, you know, they had that special something.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think one thing that just kind of stood out from watching it is, you know, I think there was an influx of a lot of talent there and for a couple years in the system, and a lot of that talent has moved on up to the Cubs major league team, which is why they're so good this year. And I think that was just kind of a reminder that even the lower levels of the system have so much more talent than they did, say, Andy, when like you and I really started going to see Cubs prospects consistently, and like me, you know, Kurt, you too. I mean, like 2008, 2009, 2010 through there, those were bad, bad teams. and I mean, when you were most excited to see Josh Vitters and he let like three ground balls go between his legs in like two innings, you know,
or Junior Lake, or, you know, guys like that, who turned out to be okay players, but, you know, not top caliber prospects.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, looking back on it, there were a few decent players on those teams, I guess, but nothing elite. And I feel like there's still elite talent, even though a lot of it has already come through the system. But if you missed our last episode, that was an interview with Chris Hagstrom with the South Bend Cubs. So if you're interested in Cubs prospects at all, you know, check out episode 8.15. I suppose the most nerve-wracking story right now, as far as the Cubs go, would be, and this is simply because of the player involved, not necessarily the severity of the injury, is Chris Bryant, and he exited today's game with an ankle issue.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wasn't too worried about it at first until I saw a precautionary MRI today.
Right, yeah.
The initial description from the Cubs is just a mild sprain, but he is undergoing a precautionary MRI, and I don't know why. I just like I'm naturally kind of alarmed by that, just because I've always thought of MRIs as being so involved and like only done when, you know, when there's serious concern that there might be some structural damage, but that's not the case
really
with major league teams, as they can do MRIs all day long.
That's true for us, but
well, yeah, and at the same time, like The Cubs probably just got new equipment and are looking for an excuse to use it.
Oh, we better fire up the MRI machine.
you turned your ankle a little bit. Oh, we better MRI that. We joke. Hopefully, it is like, you know. Hopefully,
Travis
this is
Wood bumped his elbow in the other room. We gotta send that to the MRI right quick here.
Guys are scrambling for the switches. Turn on the MRI. We got a live one.
So anyway, he's undergoing a precautionary MRI. Madden said that he saw him maybe tweak it as he was rounding second base on Rizzo's double in the third inning. And I could kind of tell when he, after he crossed the plate, he looked like he winced a couple times, but it sounds like the kind of thing that isn't going to be too serious, that could easily end up just being a day to day thing. And I would expect him, just based on the way he was still moving, if he indeed tweaked it by stepping on second base in an awkward way, that he'll be back in a few days, you know, in a day or two,
right.
Or maybe even pinch hitting, you know, or something like that.
I really think it was something where, I mean, if it really is as insignificant or is I guess as minor of an injury as they make it sound, and that it kind of appeared to be, you know, I kind of feel like if it wasn't 42 degrees and the Cubs weren't winning 5-1, maybe he would have stayed in. But at that point, he'd already, okay, it's 42 degrees. He'd already been hit by two pitches. And if he turned his ankle a little bit, I mean, they're playing the Brewers. They're going to win that game. There's really no reason to risk anything, especially with it being that cold and everything. Just get him out. Let him go down to the celebration room and kind of get things warmed up for Arrieta when he comes in.
Yeah, totally.
I guess that's all there really is to, I mean, I guess just all signs indicate that it's not that big of a deal. And probably by the time you're listening to this, there's been more substantial reports or, you know, more news about it.
He's already gotten more at bats.
right. Let's hope so. So on the topic of injuries, today the Cubs announced that they are putting Miguel Montero on the disabled list. So Kurt, what's up with Miggy?
Originally it was just some tightness in his back, and they kind of blamed the cold weather, which seemed to make some sense for catcher. And then he said he didn't think it'd be a DL stint, but they did go ahead and put him on the 15-day retroactive to Monday, and then called up Tim Fedorovich, according to the phonetic spelling. He was called up to replace him. I think a lot of people are probably wondering, why don't you call up Wilson Contreras, who's kind of on fire in Iowa? And probably for that reason, because everybody's sort of clamoring for it. And, you know, this isn't the moment to sort of make his big splash. You just want him to keep getting his everyday at bats and let him keep rolling in Iowa and his development continue, and then call him up when he's ready rather than for this short period, because the hope is Miggy's back soon. So I don't think it does Contreras a lot of good to come up for this short stint and then go back down this early in the season. So,
especially when he'll be sitting for David Ross starts, and it does him no good to come up for a brief time and sit for David Ross starts.
I'm pretty sure I read some report that said that if the plan was that if Miggy ever got injured for, you know, a longer period of time, that's when Contreras would come up. But for the short term, it was going to be, well, I thought his name was Fedorowicz, but how did you say?
Well, Andy should read it. I put the phonetic spelling in there, and I'm really bad at, when, you know, phonetic stuff, but Fedorovich.
Well, there's no accent mark on the pronunciation here. So, Federline, I think.
Kevin. Let's just call him Kevin. But yeah, anyways, it won't matter because he won't be here long, and hopefully Miggy will be back after his, you know, his back loosens up a little bit.
I never thought I would hear Kevin Federline's name again. I can't believe
it. Yeah, that just happened. There are many firsts in the IVMV podcast.
That's a
proud moment.
Yeah. Like 8 years too late.
That's my nickname. Andrew, 8 years too late, right?
Yeah, so it kind of sounds like really, you know, and I am not too concerned about this at all. I mean, I think the fewer games, the less pressure and the less, I guess, just wear and tear that Montero has during the season is fine with me. Seeing, you know, based on kind of how he ran out of gas at the end of the year last year, and you know, he's getting older, and I would just like for him to be there at the end of the season for the, you know, a playoff push and for the playoffs if we're so lucky. So seeing him kind of go to the DL for 2 weeks just because his back's sore, I think that's probably a good thing. I mean, rather than just play through it, push through it, you know, have it kind of linger and just kind of, I don't know. I mean, Ross is there, so why not use him as much as you can? And Federowicz or whatever his name is, you know, that's kind of why they signed him, is to have a backup for this, you know, for the catcher position and not have to mess with what they're doing with Contreras and as far as his development goes. So
exactly.
So let's look at the Brewer series. I want to kind of start off with the pitching, if that's all right with you guys.
I guess
Arrieta had what seems like a rough start for him, but then you look at the numbers: 5 innings pitched, 3 hits, 1 earned run, 4 walks, and 6 strikeouts. And if that's your bad start, then you're Jake Arrieta,
and you're still 5-0,
right?
And it's worth noting just how cold the day was. I mean, you could tell it was causing discomfort for all the pitchers involved in today's game. And so there were a lot, the commentators were noting that there were a lot of deep counts. There were the 4 walks on Arrieta's part. By the time he was pulled, he was in the 90s as far as pitch count. And pretty early in the game, really.
Right.
Or way earlier than usual for him. So
a lot of that is... A lot of that is
coming off of the and then just coming off of the no hitter too, having thrown a lot of pitches in that outing. It just all added up to a short game for him today.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when he had 31 pitches, only Jake Arrieta could have to throw 31 pitches in one inning and still not give up any runs. He'd left the bases loaded in the first and ended up throwing 31 innings. So at that point, you knew he was not going very far into the, you know, he wasn't going to go 7-8 innings after that. So, his scoreless innings home streak, or scoreless innings at home streak, I guess that's what we'll call it. It ended. His quality start streak ended, I think, at 24. I think that's, he had 24. But yeah, I mean, it was a cold day. I didn't really see any point in him going back out there for the 6, sitting at 92 pitches cold. He just pitched 119 pitches, you know, and the Cubs were up 5-1. No, I just don't see any reason to send him back out there. And I mean,
and with the minimum win innings to get a win too.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you guys see what Dan Heron tweeted at Arrieta today, the former Cubs pitcher?
I did.
he tweeted, to Arrieta, saw you gave up a run, hang in there, thinking of you. I liked it.
That's good stuff.
Yeah. So that's the first, like, I've heard a lot of people say, like, oh, Heron's hilarious on Twitter, and I read it and it just doesn't seem that funny to me, but that one, I literally LOL'd at that one. I thought it was pretty good. Hendricks got the other start. Is there anything you guys wanted to say about that?
It's important to note kind of the first big Madden move, I guess, of the year, where he pulled Hendricks in the 5th when Hendricks was kind of rolling. He'd only given up 2 hits and 1 run. But on the cold night again, they had to kind of go for runs when they had a shot. So he pinch hit Listella for Hendricks, and they ended up getting the 1 run on the sac fly, but, you know, and pulling that game off. But so that was kind of one of those nervous moments where it's like, if this works out, it's great. And it made sense that you got a pinch hit in that situation. But at the same time, Hendricks looked really good on Tuesday. So nice to see your number five go out there and, you know, go five. Could have gone probably at least two more, throwing the ball really well. So
anytime he's putting the Cubs in a position to win a ball game, I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah. I guess offensively, this short two game series, you know, what stood out to me, I guess, obviously it was a cold and windy series. Today was cold and windy. Game one at night was cold and windy. And with the, I think what I took away from these two games is just that this team can manufacture runs. And this is the type of series where in years past, like two runs, if another team put up two runs on the Cubs, that was going to be it. And if the Cubs could score two runs, we had a pretty good chance of winning the game. I mean, that's just the way these early spring games are, especially when the wind's blowing in and everything. But the Cubs scored four on Tuesday. They scored, what, seven today? 7-2 was the score today.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know. Like, I just, it seems weird to me that the wind is blowing in. It's like 42 degrees and the Cubs can score seven runs. And David Ross can hit a ball onto Waveland Avenue. Like, that's so crazy. But
bring that up, or somebody bring that up.
What's that?
Ross homer. I think you must have cut out there, so I thought I wasn't talking over you, but maybe I was. But anyway, David Ross has two more home runs to go to get to 100 now.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to happen. That was a big bomb he hit today.
I know. And it was as bat flippy as David Ross can get. yeah, he
rely on Pat, but it sounded pretty.
He is absolutely playing ligaments be damned right now, and it is a ton of fun to watch.
Yeah, he's been fun to watch. I actually look forward to get his starts.
yeah. Well, he'll be starting tomorrow too. So, and then kind of going back to Tuesday's game. You know, they won that game 4-3, and you can really thank Addison Russell for some timely hitting. And I think Russell will be a ton of fun to watch this season because he's developing so much as a player. I mean, there's no doubting his defense, but here in his second year, you can see some really big changes. And I mean, this is a small sample size, of course, but he's not swinging at pitches outside of the zone as much, which has really increased his walk rate. His walk rate was 8% last year, and it's up to 13.2% now. And his strikeout rate has dropped from 28% to 17%. And in spring training, we saw him display a little more power, and you know, he's just had some, like, a few notable moments this season with the home run in the home opener and then the triple in Tuesday's game. And when you stop swinging at those pitches that are outside of the zone, well, those are the ones that you're not going to get solid contact with if you're able to make contact at all. And he's not swinging at those as much, so he's driving the ball more. His hard contact rate and his line drive rate have gone up. So if your hard contact line drive rate and walk rate go up and your strikeouts drop pretty significantly, then I think you're making some really good adjustments. And I think it's a good sign from him here early in the season.
For sure. And I wanted to point out Javier Baez's slide in game one too. You'd think like the guy would be a little trigger shot, you know, a little bit, you know, maybe tentative after having injured his fingers multiple times with slides, and he just still seems to go full bore, full speed, you know, on everything without concern for his well-being.
Yeah, I think
it was kind of, oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say that I just feel like I need to say on every episode how much I like Javier Baez. Like, I feel like I'm saying it all the time, but I think we can expect to see many more shocking displays of athleticism from Baez. I think we're going to see a lot more this year.
I was going to give him a hard time about the fact that on Instagram, he kept posting picture, like a still frame, still frame of the slide. And then somebody like messaged him and said, "Hey, maybe you'll like this GIF." And then he tweeted he put up the GIF. That was so funny. It was like a total grandma moment, like where you're like, "Grandma, just put up a GIF." I thought that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, he is a lot of fun though, and that was an incredible slide. I mean, I think, you know, Chris Bryant's slide last year into third, or Rizzo's slide into third last year, you know, where he said it was magic. I mean, that was a really impressive slide, but this was just like pure athleticism. Like, how in the world he pulled that off? I have no idea. It was like fingertips and toenails.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I did want to mention how disappointing all this rain has been, just yeah. because I was going to get to watch the Cubs on Wednesday night, and I was really looking forward to it, and then there was rain, and then Thursday and Friday are both day games, so yeah. I'll be out, you know, I'm at work, so I'm not really getting my Cubs fixed so much this week. I did get to see the end of today's game, you know, because it was so long.
Right.
Well, and see, for me, it's kind of opposite, because like these like 6 or 7 p.m. starts are kind of hard because the bedtime conflicts. Whereas if I'm at work, I don't get to watch, but I can listen pretty intently to the games while I'm at work. So
That's nice.
I kind of like the day games.
Yeah, I've kind of grown to appreciate both. I mean, I've really started to enjoy the radio broadcast, but it is nice, especially, you know, Tawny's been a lot more willing to sit and watch games with me at night. And so that's made it easier to justify like just wasting three hours.
Sounds like a real turning point in your Cubs fandom.
What a waste.
I don't know if you guys heard it today, but Pat Hughes dropped his first turning point with one out in the first inning. One out in the top of the first. And he said that, basically pointed out that turning points can really happen at any point in the game. And this felt like one.
Well, no, they can't, because I think a turning point has to have some momentum. Some momentum has to have been built up in one direction.
Well, there was one out.
Hence the turning point. The nomenclature turning point.
Right. Oh, let's not hate on Pat.
No, I know.
No. I don't hate Pat. I like him a lot.
Yeah. Okay, so
but I can't listen to work, sadly.
Right, yeah. We do have some listener questions. These were submitted through our Patreon supporters Facebook group. You can join that group/forum by becoming a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/IVMV. And also you can submit your questions at any time through our voicemail. You can call in to our show through the free IVMV iOS or Android apps. You can tap contact, then tap call the show, or you can call 309-517-0624. Just put that in your phone. And actually, we have a couple of voicemail here to play at the end of the episode, so stick around. But yeah, put that in your phone. And if you're watching a game, you see something that you want to chime in on, just leave a voicemail and we'll throw them on at the end of the show. So this first one comes from Dave, and he says, we live in the same area, basically. Have you had to defend Jake from the stupid Cardinal fans jumping on the PED allegations?
Short answer for me, no, but I live in Iowa, so Cardinals fans are fewer here.
I haven't either. It's come up in conversation with other Cubs fans, but I haven't had to actually defend him. Now, I've done plenty of defending of him just mentally and just while reading through stuff on Twitter, but yeah. But not in conversation.
Yeah, I haven't. I'm actually around a few Cardinals fans, and I haven't heard anything. Man, those Cardinal fans are sensitive right now, Andy. I talked with, there's a Cardinals fan that you work with. I'm sure you probably know who I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And I was in a meeting with him, and I kind of like, because I work with a Cardinals fan, I kind of know what's going on with their team, and it's just like, you know, it's small talk. So I sat down and I was like, yeah, cause it was yesterday when Wainwright was supposed to pitch. He's looked pretty bad all season. And so I was like, so what's going on with Wainwright? What are they going to do with him? And he kind of sat there and he's like, listen to these Cubs fans. Listen to them. Just walking around with their chest, you know, shoved out and everything. I was like, oh, I asked you what was going on with Wainwright. Like,
the tables have turned.
I know.
Just trying to show an interest, my man.
Oh, just so sensitive. Like, you can't say anything about the Cardinals. It's like.
However, I will say I saw multiple examples of Cardinals fans on Twitter defending Arrieta, and I saw multiple people saying that they were going to take off their cards colored glasses on this one.
Yeah, I saw that.
And and say that the Stephen A. Smith crap was ridiculous. And so I got to say, I appreciated seeing people live up to their self-applied moniker of best fans in baseball every once in a while.
They're, like we discussed last time, they're negative and they're rational people in every fan base. So they're bound to pop up once in a while. But
yeah,
I think this is a good example of what Madden was trying to tell everybody with embrace the target. So the target's on fans, the target's on the team, the target's on everybody that wants to associate themselves with the Cubs. So
right.
I thought it was hilarious.
People are going to be coming after us.
I thought it was hilarious that one of Stephen A. Smith's main arguments for it was that he all of a sudden has higher innings pitched. That's increased exponentially.
Yeah.
And I saw this dude on Twitter just post like a spreadsheet of his innings pitched across all levels every year he's been in baseball, and they're almost the same amount.
There's so many flaws in that guy's rationale. Oh, you can't even.
It was sophism at its finest, making the weaker speech the stronger. Just pure buffoonery.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't even really want to get into it just because, I don't know.
It's been handled.
Right. Yeah.
Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah. Sure.
It was handled by Jake himself. Yeah. Nobody needs to do battle for Jake. Apparently he's fully capable of doing it himself.
But I can imagine how hard it must be for guys like that to bite their tongue. You know, something like comes up, you know, for normal, you know, everyday people, he probably just is able to ignore it, but you know, he sees it on ESPN and guy tweets at him. He's just like, he probably just wants to go off, but he knows he has to.
Well, you know what though? I agree with you, but on the other hand, this is kind of, I don't know. I really don't want to get into this whole topic, but like, I mean, Major League, this is like what happens when Major League Baseball didn't take care of things when they should have. Like this is like that question, that the lingering questions and accusations, like you're just going to get that now whenever anybody has improves greatly or anything, just because that seed of doubt is there or whatever. So I don't know. I just want to enjoy baseball, and I don't really care about those types of things. Bill, he says, what team do you see as the, I totally, read his question wrong earlier because I had thought about something completely. He said, what team do you see as the biggest obstacle to the Cubs making the World Series this year? And I thought he just meant what is the biggest obstacle. So I would have been thinking about health and stuff like that. So I'll answer what is the biggest obstacle, and I think it's health.
Well, it seems evident.
Yeah, I was thinking that most people would probably say experience, but I think if the team can stay healthy, head into the postseason with a healthy lineup and rotation, this team has good chance to do well in the playoffs. So what team do you guys see as the biggest obstacle?
My favorite team is health.
The Hoffman Estates Health.
Go ahead, Andy.
I think that the NL East is a division that's looking pretty strong early on, especially I think Washington with their rotation could be a tough team to deal with. I don't really feel like the Cubs are going to be threatened by the NL West like they have been, that they're not the same strength that they were in the past. But anyway, I think it's going to be a battle with Pittsburgh and then, Washington, maybe the Mets. But yeah, I would say Washington and Pittsburgh.
Yeah, but really, I mean, I think any team can, because any team can get hot in the playoffs. Any team can, who knows who's going to go out and make moves at the trade deadline to strengthen their rotations. I mean, we saw last year what happens when you run into a rotation that's just like, playing out of their, pitching out of their minds and are insanely good. I just really think any team in the playoffs could derail any other team.
Mm-hmm. Well, I pretty much was gonna say exactly what Andy said. Like divisionally, the Pirates, and then like National League wise, probably the Nationals. But you know, it's hard not to be influenced by the early season results, even though we're so early. But
right,
you know, they creep into your head, and those teams look really good.
Yeah, next weekend, the Nationals come to town, and that should be a lot of fun. Hopefully it's warm.
Yeah, and the Cubs do play the Pirates soon too. So,
well, they play,
see them play.
Yeah, well, they play what, the Pirates next week at the beginning of the week, and then they play the Nationals at the end of the week. So that'll be a tough week.
Ooh. Oh man, looking forward to that. Yeah. Hopefully those are night games.
Yeah, I think, well, Pittsburgh's on the road, so at least the first two are, I think. I think they're on the road. Heck, I don't have the schedule in front of me. They probably don't even play the Pirates.
No, yeah, you guys are correct. Monday the 2nd, they start the Pirates series on the road, and then Thursday the 5th, they host the Nationals for a four-game series.
Yeah.
But I was going to say a joke answer to that. I was going to say the Braves to that question. They are currently 4-17.
Man, the Cubs could score so many runs in that series. Like, oh, that could be a fun series. Hopefully it warms up a tad. It's supposed to stay cold this weekend, though, so that kind of sucks.
Yeah, next week at least is supposed to be warm. For that National Series, hopefully they'll get a good span of, you know, days as far as weather is concerned.
Yeah. Dawn from Plainfield, she says, are you concerned about our catcher situation? This was before Montero was placed on the DL, but says Miggy has a sore back, Ross is 75 years old, and Schwarber is down. Thoughts? And then Mike has a question, too, to kind of throw in that was related to that. He said, to piggyback on Don's question, would it be smart to have Contreras up here and go to seven guys in the pen? The downside, I think, is that Contreras won't get enough at-bats with the Cubs, and it might stunt his development. So, just overall catching thoughts, guys.
If I could address that, who was it that said that second
Mike.
Part?
Mike.
Mike. I think anytime they can actually get away with carrying the number of pitchers they have right now is a good thing. You know, when they can pick up the starters when they have shorter starts in cold weather like this, and you know, limit the innings of, you know, some of the guys. And come in and pitch effectively. I think it's a good thing, especially with the way Neil Ramirez seems to be throwing the ball pretty well. And he, you know, he might be one of the guys who would be the odd man out as far as if they were to axe a bullpen guy.
He has no option, so it's like you either EFA or you trade him. So if you're going to go to seven, you got to make a tough call with one of those guys.
Yeah.
And he'd likely be the guy. I mean, there's nobody else you can afford to cut out of that bullpen.
Right.
Right.
But as far as the catching situation goes, I'm really not too concerned about it. I mean, I think this is why they have Federowicz, you know, just to fill in. Right. To fill in for something like this. And like we've been saying, I think Ross, like, if he's hitting the ball as well as he is right now, and he can physically do it, you know, for a while, I have no problem with him playing as many games as he needs to here while Montero is on the DL. I mean, if Ross is the everyday catcher, I have no problem with that. I don't know what his body can handle, but.
Well, I agree. And you joked about it last week about, like, you know, ligaments be damned. And there's some truth to it, because this last year, the guy's going to, you know, if he tweaks his ankle, they're not doing an MRI. Like, he's just going to play. Right. And I think, you know, that you can kind of just keep throwing him out there unless he's seriously hurt. So he's legit. And then, you know, Miggy, I don't think this is serious. And then also, if anything does happen, you can call up Contreras. But for now, I think you just leave him alone. Let him get his time in AAA.
And, you know, Ross playing the way that he is right now and just going all out in every aspect of his play, like, I think that is a really good example to these young players, too. I think if he can, I hate to see players really, like, quote unquote, playing through injury, because I think he can do more damage. And I don't really know how much, you know, how good of a thing that is. But I think just seeing the full effort that he gives all the time and probably everything that he's doing behind the scenes and preparing for the game and everything, I think he's probably like, I mean, we've learned that he is a key piece to the clubhouse. And I think just the way he's playing right now, it's got to have an effect on everybody else. I mean, especially in like cold, miserable weather where they'd probably rather be in that sweet new clubhouse they have. You know, if you can see somebody like David Ross out there, Grandpa Rossi, you know, 38 years old or whatever, and playing all, you know, going all out, I think that would have to rub off on everybody. So I think having him kind of carry the load while Montero's down, I think I would like to see that.
Yeah, Don, don't worry just yet. And plus, I saw on one of the reports that Baez is kind of the emergency backup catcher. So
right.
We have him, and I have no doubt that he could probably catch pretty well.
Yeah.
He'd probably be a stellar catcher.
Oh, I mean, nobody would want to steal on him. He has such a gun.
He has an extra thick catcher's mitt for his tender fingers.
Right. He'd be super fidgety back there, kind of like his batting stance or his batting. He'd just be like twitching all over. He would catch with flair.
Right. Jeremiah says, who would win in a Zoolander-style runway pose-off, Express model Chris Bryant or Saks underwear model Jake Arrieta?
Oh, man. These are the questions we usually spend 30 minutes talking about. Yeah,
these are the questions that this is all we had in 2012, 2013, yeah. Were these types of questions.
This one seems kind of rusty easy dealing with them, huh? I think this one's easy. I think Arrieta, because I've seen pictures of him on those Pilates machines.
Right.
And, you know, that guy can get in some poses.
But, I mean, if it's just face only, I think the edge would probably go to Chris.
Yeah, but, just facial. Okay. Sorry. I'm a little off
blue steel, whatever Zoolander's look is.
Yeah,
I'm sticking with Jake.
Yeah, I think I'll go with Jake too, just because I think I'll admit I've never seen Zoolander. I'm sure that'll shock you guys. Lauren has a question. Can we start a Kickstarter Patreon campaign to send Tom Brenneman some fries? He needs something to go with all that salt. I cannot wait for the Reds to come to Wrigley Field this year and to hear what, you know, based on what his dad has said in the past and what Tom has said now, Brennemans are just, I don't think they can stop themselves. So I say, Cubs fans, if you're going to those games in the Reds against the Reds at Wrigley, which I am in July, I would say just
talking to myself now. Yeah, here.
I'm going to be as obnoxious as I can just to annoy Tom Brenneman.
You need to make a Brenneman sign.
Yeah, right. No, just, you know, enough already. Just hold up that sign. Enough already.
Quiet, please. Like one of those golf fans they have on the greens at golf tournaments or whatever. Quiet, please. Enough already.
Okay, so we have some scary stats, several scary stats that were sent in from listeners. So I have one, and I know, do you want to do a couple of them, Kurt, and then I'll do one?
Benjamin asked kind of about this on Twitter, about the Cubs' speed to 10 over 500, 2015 versus 2016. And thanks to Mike in the Patreon group, answered and told us that 2016, it took them 20 games, and in 2015, it took them 106 games. And that's the, you know, team that won 97 games total. Right now, you know, well, on the 26, I should say, the Cubs were 15-5. Last year, it was on August 5th, and they were 58-48. So quite a contrast, but certainly different teams. Yeah, like where they kind of poured it on later. There was a point where they were 500, I think, in June or something? So
I think it was kind of around that Philly series, wasn't it?
Yeah, then just kind of turned it on from there.
Yeah.
Jason from New York said that through the first 19 games, the Cubs are on pace for 827 walks. The NL record is 732 by the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1947. The MLB record is 835 by the 1949 Red Sox. So yeah, that's pretty impressive. It's a little tough with these early season ones to think that they'll keep that pace, but at the same time, the approach has been so good that, you know, it's kind of hard to argue that they would change that approach.
And way more, and tons of walks today too. So this scary stat kind of goes along with it. It's kind of nice. Everybody sends us scary stats. We didn't even have to dig. Yeah, and this comes from Andrew on Twitter at Andrew Hanus. He said, in your opinion, does this year's team look like they have better plate discipline than last year? And then he says, cue sample small sample size song, but I won't do that to you guys. I don't think we need the small sample size song for this, because this scary stat comes from the Cubs TV broadcast. The Cubs have had three games this season with double digit walks for the team. Wow. Three. That is how many double digit walks, three, the Cubs had in the previous six seasons combined.
No way.
That's a good one. That's impressive.
Yep. You can thank whoever discovered that on the Cubs TV broadcast.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's pretty obvious that this team has more discipline, you know?
Yeah.
And we've talked about this before, even on a strikeout, like we'll see a 3-2 strikeout, which is still a productive at bat.
Right.
And it just goes on in the box score as a strikeout, but you know,
yeah, I would say that I don't think we need a small sample size for that, looking at their discipline right now. I mean, this team walks, and they're going to walk all season long. And they may not walk at the rate that they are right now, but that is a definite aspect of this team, characteristic of this team.
Well, and then you combine that discipline with the ability to hit the ball.
Right.
And it's like, I'm going to take my walk, and then you throw a mistake over the plate and boom, you know, this offense is just crazy good.
Okay. So Andy, do you have a Rube Waddell story for us this week?
Yeah, just a brief one. Slightly before Rube played for, his first major league team, the Louisville Colonels in 1897, he played for Volant College, and to play for them, he got free tuition and room and board, and also $1 per game, as well as free tobacco. but he averaged 15 strikeouts per 7-inning game. So he was pretty dominant, but, according to the source, several times, he called for all of his players to leave the field and pitch with no defense behind him. and apparently it worked out okay for him. And he would often celebrate three strikeout innings by cartwheeling, walking on his hands, or somersaulting off the field back to the dugout.
Heather in the chat believes that you're just making this stuff up. Oh my gosh, that's so crazy. So he sends a defense off the field and they do it, and then he celebrates with cartwheels. See, and people say that, like, you know, people don't like new baseball with bat flips, yeah, and stuff. Look, there's no pitchers doing cartwheels and handstands off and sending the defense off the field. Oh, that's great. So that does it for this episode. Again, we would appreciate it if you would go to podcastawards.com and nominate Ivy Envy in the sports category. If you nominated us already, we really appreciate it. This episode is brought to you by all of our Patreon supporters, people like Ray from Sacramento, California, Ian from Montreal, Taylor from Elkhart, Indiana, Jose from Oak Lawn, and Bob from the UK. And we have a new Patreon supporter this week, Barnes, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, from South Africa. And last week it was Aruba, this week South Africa. So that's really cool to hear from Cubs fans from all over the world. We really appreciate the support. If you enjoy what we're doing here at IVMV and you would like to help us fund the show, upgrade equipment, help us fund some of the events that we do, then you can check out our Patreon campaign. Pledging levels start at just $1 a month, and it's probably pocket change for you, and it doesn't seem like much, but it helps us tremendously. You can get perks like stickers, posters, pint glasses. You can check it all out at patreon.com/IVMV. That's patreon.com/IVMV. Or you can go to IVMV and click on the Patreon link on the right side of the page. The lowly Braves come to town this weekend, and let's hope that the Cubs can continue their winning ways before things get a little tougher in the month of May. So thank you for listening, and until next time, go Cubs.
Hey, it's Matthew from Justice. I'm calling to comment about the show. I'm an episode behind. I just listened to the one where you guys gave away the box of Rizzos. Anyways, you guys are talking about the Cubs scoring more than 20 runs. The highest scoring game, May 17th, 1979. The Phillies at the Cubs, 23-22. The Cubs lost. The wind was blowing out. And a few years ago, when MLB used to have where you could watch old classic games, this was one of the ones that was on there. I watched the game. This was about 6 or 7 years ago. And it was incredible watching the bombs that were just going out. Great game. I hope that these Cubs that we've got this year can do something close to that. That would just be more awesome spread on top of the awesome that the Cubs are already showing this year. That would be the highlight of any season already. So anyways, I just thought I'd let you know about that game, and can we hope for 23 runs or more? Talk to you later, guys. Have a good one.
Hey, guys. I'm just watching the game this afternoon from the top of the seventh, and I was thinking about how this team is so much better in the past couple of years ago, just with the offense specifically. Like, whenever I watched Cubs games, I always focused on the pitching matchup because it seemed like that was the one place where, you know, we could have a good player or have a guy get lucky and have a great game and have a chance of winning. But now it's more fun to watch almost the offense because you just never know how great they're going to be at any one day or how many walks they're going to take or who's going to hit a bomb. Like, it's just a lot more, it's different and it's more fun, I think, to watch and know that the offense can be good. And I haven't really been used to it. I know last year was kind of a change for that, but this year, ever since the beginning of the year, it's really fun to watch this team play ball and have an offense. I just want to say I